Through a collaboration with Vegas PBS, we're bringing you selected interviews from their Nevada Week in-person televised series. This week, we're featuring an interview from last year with Nevada Week host Amber Renee Dixon. She talked with Quentin Savoie, president of the Las Vegas branch of the NAACP. He talks about his work for the local Black community, his early introduction to the organization, and what inspires him. And here's that conversation.
Quentin Savoie, thank you for joining Nevada Week in person.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real delight.
Born and raised in Kansas City, Missouri, what was it that brought you to Las Vegas and
when? Yes, the heart of America, right? Came out to Las Vegas. My husband's an entertainer. My sister had moved out here at the time. This was in 2017. Got here on December 30th, and I told myself we're starting the top of the year. Viva Las Vegas.
So it wasn't a job. It was
No. It was personal. And my grandmother lives 4 hours away in Temecula, so I wanted to be much closer to her as she's getting in her advanced age. She's still with us today at 92. So that 4-hour drive to check on her is a little bit of a doozy. We need to make her a Las Vegas.
So 92 years old then, that would mean, I did my math because you told me this ahead of time, she was born in the 30s.
Yes, 1931.
So what were the issues that she was attending these NAACP conventions for? What would she tell you about them and when she brought you along?
Absolutely. Well, my grandmother grew up in an era of civil rights icons that we learn about in school and that we learn about just in the world. So she very much has good recall of the courage that it took to fight for civil rights, to fight for voting rights, to fight to make sure that women have equality. My grandmother was born at a time before she could even get a bank account or a credit card in her own name. Mm. So for her to be part of a social justice and civil rights organization was paramount, and to get me involved at a young age was also important.
What do you remember from those conventions?
All the things are so boring. Like, it was good to be around other young people. I was visiting, I remember distinctly a convention that was in California as a child. And I remember all the young people there because it was always such a big deal to go to California for me in the summertime. But today what I know is that roaming the halls then are the civil rights leaders and activists that I'm seeing now, or their offsprings, who are still fighting to protect and advance civil rights 115 years later into this organization.
Yeah, when you think about the differences of then versus today, how different are the issues?
You know, I say this all the time. I think we're just dealing with the same issues in perpetuity, unfortunately. We've made some progress in a lot of ways. I won't ever deny that. But to be in a moment where we're still having issues around housing affordability, like, these were conversations that my grandmother was having in her heyday. To be having conversations about public school access, like, these are still very much salient issues. I would say some of the new things that have come up would be issues around how we take care of our seniors. It may have been an issue then, but I know today there's definitely needs to be more of a focused conversation about what taking care of our seniors look like. I'm her caregiver, and I just never thought we would have the issues that we're having when it comes to elder care.
You think it's different then than it is now?
Well, I don't know.
Okay,
right?
I guess
that's fair. Like, things were so in your face then. Like, it was very obvious, like, certain people could not vote, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know that conversations about senior care were happening. But as for me, I'm seeing a rollback of rights. I'm seeing a multi-pronged attack to roll people's rights back. And I'm dealing with a lot of things that it's like, oh, wow, we don't have good systems as a community of people to take care of seniors as they get into advanced ages.
We saw you in action recently at an NAACP voter engagement initiative. People from around the country were there to learn how to engage people in their own communities about simply voting, going to vote. And you asked members of local leaders from different organizations that are supporting Black families here in Las Vegas, what is their happy? And so, coming off of you talking about, you know, rolling back rights and you're concerned about, there's not much of a difference perhaps from back when your grandmother was attending these conventions. What is your happy? How do you keep going?
How do I keep going? That's a great question. I've got some great nieces and nephews that I think about a whole lot. And I would just hate for them to be fighting for these same things 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now. I want to be able to say, no, we put a pin in that. And as people, we got to a place where we could make measurable progress on this thing so that we don't have to keep talking about it, right? They are my go-to very, very frequently. I'm also a musical theater nerd. So anytime that I'm feeling down, I try to turn on a musical theater track, and that gets me in a better spirit. But for me, as a community leader, as a person who's in the space of civil rights and social justice, I have to hold on to hope. That's my product. That's what I sell. So if I'm not happy, if I'm not espousing what's possible, then I can't inspire a movement of people to be mobilized to take action in their own lives. So for me, the anchor has to be find something that fills you up, find something that keeps you going ahead.
Give me an example of what you have found other people's happies to be.
That's a great question. I've found other folks' things to be, like, they go to the spa. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take a day to just go to the spa. Now, that's a little pricey for me. Yeah. But other things have simply been drives. I've got a friend who's like, no, I just get on the highway and I just drive. It lets me clear my head, right? I think it's less about the thing and more about making sure you have space to center yourself, to be still, be quiet. What I've learned as a leader is that when I'm still and I'm quiet, sometimes a good idea comes to me regularly. I like to think those are those who've come before me whispering, saying, try this, see if it works, you know? Mm,
okay. When you took on this role in 2023 as the president of the Las Vegas branch, you talked about the rich history of this particular branch. What mm-hmm. stands out to you when you think about that?
Oh, goodness. Well, what stands out to me most is how many people come to town and say there's no culture in this city. We have such a rich and diverse culture in this town, and I think it's layered throughout the history of the NAACP. I stay most impressed by the conversation that took place in the Moulin Rouge Cafe that was organized by Mr. Jim Anderson, but the president at the time was James McMillan. And what they did was they convened local leaders to talk about what it would mean to desegregate the Las Vegas Strip, because the NAACP was planning a public demonstration if they did not desegregate the Strip. And they left that meeting with an agreement to desegregate the Strip so that folks could come down and enjoy the amenities that we all enjoy today. I think I'm also impressed by the work that the NAACP did to make sure that people of color, Black folks in particular, had access to those jobs, because it wasn't just a given. So it's been advocacy on all fronts, not just on one.
You have so much within your answers that I want to jump back to. So let's start with talking about people taking a moment to be quiet and to themselves, but you're also encouraging discourse, mm-hmm. and especially among people who don't agree mm-hmm. on things. That's so difficult these days. How do you get people to do that?
Yeah, I think it's where having relationships gets involved, right? Because so often, if you have a disagreement with someone, it means that we're not friends, we're enemies. And that doesn't have to be the case. You can't sustain a healthy community or a healthy democracy in that way. There should be conflict. Conflict is not a problem. I think we've been conditioned as humans to think that conflict has to be problematic, and that's not necessarily the case. You can have a good human interaction and it be in conflict, because on the other side of conflict is a viable outcome that works for both sides. So I really, really try to get folks to understand the importance of investing in relationships with each other, so that when you have moments of contention, it is not, oh my God, I'm not ever gonna talk to them again, but instead, we disagree today, I'll call you back on Thursday, let's go get lunch. Mm. You know, there used to be a time that that was more commonplace, but now I think we're so in our phones, we live in this very isolated world where only we listen to people who agree with us. That's not how you sustain a democracy.
Is there a time where you have spoken with someone of an opposing belief and they changed your mind on something?
That actually happens a lot, yes. I have a lot of folks around me who challenge me. It helps actually my arguments, honestly, because I was in speech and debate as a middle school and high schooler. But I really like opposing viewpoints because it helps me learn. An example would be when I talk to my friends who are in the business community. One of my big rallying calls when I first got here was paid sick days, paid family time. And those are still very, very important. But if you are a startup small business and you only got three people, paid time off for those three people could be devastating for your business. So it's learning the viewpoints of folks who have different walks of life that help shape my arguments a little bit differently. I still maintain that strong business practices and strong family practices work together, right? Like, you should be able to have a successful business and successful practices for your employees, because those things have to coincide. You can't have a strong business if you don't have a strong workforce.
Yeah, there are nuances to
There are.
Measurably improving mm-hmm. the lives of people in your community. You make that a point in your bios, in your various bios, because you've been in the public sector, the private sector, in politics, but that is what you are committed to. So why measurably? Why include that word?
Sure. I think it's important because right now we're living through a time where folks don't have a lot of faith in the systems and leaders that surround them. You hear one thing and it's a whole other thing, or you don't know what to believe. And I always think about a young man whose door I knocked in 2018. He said, well, my hood didn't change under Obama and it didn't get any worse under Trump. And that still sticks with me, because what that says to me is that you didn't see any tangible improvements from any of your leaders enough to feel mobilized to take action in any election. And when I say election, I don't just mean the art of voting. I mean staying engaged year round, showing up at a school district meeting or a county commission meeting, because you can't just vote and be done. Right. So when I think about measurable improvements, I think about the simple things of, if I tell you I'm going to do something on Saturday at noon, then I'm going to do it at Saturday at noon. And that type of integrity is missing in our public leadership a lot of times these days.
Measurable improvements that you have helped make that you're most proud of? What are some of them?
Listen, I grew up with a mom and all sisters. My dad was around. I love my dad. Shout out to my dad. But Black women have definitely shaped the man I am today. And when I learned that black women were dying in childbirth at disparate rates, that really incensed me. So in 2021, I worked on passing legislation that would expand Medicaid coverage to support doulas. Doulas are birth assistants for the birth parent, and studies show that when you have doula support, you're more likely to have a traditional birth and better outcomes versus a cesarean. In this state, 60% of the babies are born are paid for by the state. And when you have a cesarean, it's actually more expensive. So the policy we passed in 2021 saved lives and saved the state money. You're welcome, Nevada.
Look at that, mind blown. I'm glad you bring up your parents because you mentioned you're the son of a labor leader.
My dad was a Teamster.
Okay, and yes. Then also the son of a school administrator, mm-hmm. your mother. And you noticed at a young age how people that are you know, have a lot of work, that are overworked, are what are the words that you use? Just not recognized, not taken care of.
Working families in the margins, yes. Not offered a seat at the table. Don't have the space in their day to go to a school board meeting, mm-hmm. right? Like my sister, for most of the life growing up, my nieces and nephews, they're all adults now. It's crazy. But my sister worked two jobs. She worked a day job. She worked a night job. There's not a lot of space for her to go to a city council meeting or a school board meeting. It wasn't that she didn't want to. She had to put food on the table, and her story is not unique to her. So how many single moms do we have across the country who want to be involved but can't be involved? I'm always thinking about those families. I'm always thinking about the folks who are trying their hardest, trying to get through the day, but always have some type of issue. My mom, when she was secretary, the kids would, growing up, she was secretary of a school. Kids would be at extended day, but their ride would never get there on time. So there would be regular instances where I'd see my mom taking kids home just to avoid issues with the state because we had a relationship with the family and she knew what was happening. It was often that the mom was getting off late from work or something happened in the family that was an emergency and we would stand in for them in an unofficial way, but that was such a selfless way to keep that family from having bigger problems.
Because if those parents didn't show up on time, they would have issues.
Yeah, you call them the family division. Your kids are going to the state or something. It's like abandonment.
Mm. I just want to be accurate on that quote, that you witnessed firsthand how hardworking people are often overlooked and underserved.
Yes.
Okay, we are running out of time. So where do I go from here? Because you mentioned musical theater. I have to ask you what your favorite musical is.
Oh my goodness. Into the Woods, Hamilton, Rent. I mean, my gosh, there's tons of them. I think about Northern Lights, a story of Detroit high school students who protested during 1968's riots in Detroit. There's so many theater shows that I love. I went to a performing arts high school, so we could have a whole separate segment about that.
Which one do you turn to when you are feeling down?
This sounds so cliche, but I when I'm feeling down, I turn to Hamilton. Because we've done hard things in this country before, and it's no secret that we're living through some hard times, right? But knowing that we've gone through hard times before inspires me to know, oh, okay, it's just my moment to eat the frog, right? Do the hard thing, get on the other side of it, and reflect on how challenging something was, but to bask in the glory of what you've overcome.
Eat the frog. I haven't heard that term.
Oh, really? Yes. It's just like, do the hard thing first.
Okay.
Right? Like, get it done. Get it out of the way.
And then you have also said that you are a fan of political memoirs.
Yes.
What are some of your favorites?
Oh, goodness. I really, really enjoyed President Eisenhower's memoir. I grew up in Missouri. He grew up in Kansas. Very unlikely. I'm like, I wouldn't really care for that. I don't, this is middle of nowhere, right? But this man, I really resonated with a lot of the things in his memoir because he talks very personally about what it's like to be a leader and how hard it is to make decisions when you're the only person who knows what that feels like. Now, I have not had the whole world on my shoulders before, but there are certain elements that I recall reading that just made me feel like, wow, that has to be kind of lonely.
That was Nevada Week in Person host Amber Renee Dixon with Quentin Savoie, president of the NAACP Las Vegas branch. We're able to bring you these conversations as part of our collaboration with Vegas PBS. And for more interviews like these, visit vegaspbs.org or knpr.org.